Welcome to Conversations. And now, from Los Angeles, here's your host, Mike Dowler.
Thank you, Sean, from Los Angeles. I'm Mike Dowler. Welcome to Conversations Radio. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on X, follow us on Instagram at Conversations Radio. Hey, on Facebook, we're simply Conversations the Podcast. On X, it's at Converse Radio. That's like the shoe without the E, at Converse Radio. If you want to go ahead and email us, feel free. I get email. I respond as much as I can. I mean, I'm overwhelmed sometimes with the following here we get on the podcast, but thank you. ConversationsPod@gmail.com. This is a great show tonight, guys, and we're a little early, but we want to accommodate those folks on the East Coast that go to bed early. Tonight's guest is a legend in game show history. It's announcer Jim Thornton. He is the announcer on Wheel of Fortune. That's America's game. Wheel of Fortune, again, seen in many countries. His just seen here in maybe Canada. And he's got a pretty good radio background as well. If you're from Southern California, you've heard him many times on local stations and whatnot. My co-host is going to be Brooke Binkowski. She's a multi-outlet journalist, and we'll talk to her. And we've worked together, actually, kind of. So it's kind of cool there. So we'll get to going in just a second here. Last show we did was episode number 166. That's with Skywalker Hughes. Skywalker plays Ashley Schmidt in Ordinary Angels, opposite Hilary Swank. That's in theaters now. Really a great movie and a true story. Hilary Swank plays a woman who is dealing with an addiction problem, but gets it together and helps a family with two daughters that have issues, and one particularly, Michelle, who needed a liver transplant. Through a series of just miracles and the good heartedness of Susan, they were able to raise a lot of money, help pay off and erase hospital bills, and get her that liver. And it was a huge story back in the 80s. Go check it out for sure. Ordinary Angels. It's in theaters now. Fantastic cast and a fantastic story. And again, more podcasts on the way. Summer just around the corner. We're doing the daylight savings time thing now, which is great. I love it because it reminds me of baseball and spring and all things warm. Let's go ahead and just get started here because it's going to be a great show. My co-host, no stranger to radio, TV, print, things south of the border on occasion, and north of the border. Brooke Binkowski is a journalist, award-winning journalist, who's been heard on CNN, CBS, NPR, and also did traffic for many years, too. I was doing weekends at AM 1220 KHTS, and Brooke was my traffic lady. She'd call every 20 minutes or so, and we'd go to her. She'd give us the rundown on our perfect freeways here in SoCal. And our guest has done it too, but we'll get to him in just a sec here. But Brooke Binkowski, again, from the San Diego area, she's been there her whole life. She does get out and do stuff, and again, got her start early on in radio. And actually, she's worked everywhere from LA, Alaska, Atlanta, everywhere, and now we've got her here on the podcast. She's also a writer. A novel is in the wings, and really good to connect with her. And this is a last minute thing for her. She was like, "Oh no, I can't do it. I'm sorry." I said, "Well, 30 minutes." She goes, "Oh, Jim Thornton? Oh, sure.
Aww.
You know, so we'll do it."
Makes me sound like a climber.
You are. And Brooke Binkowski, welcome to Conversations Radio. Glad to have you back.
It's nice to be here. Thank you. In all seriousness, I was trying to rearrange my schedule. It wasn't just because Jim was coming on. I swear. I feel terrible. That sounded awful. But yeah, I did. I started in traffic. You can't see me, but I'm blushing.
Yeah.
I started in traffic at Shadow Broadcast in the 90s. That was my first on-air official job, and it was the coolest thing ever. It was like magic being on the radio. I was like, talk on the radio, people can hear me. It's magic. And I've never lost it. I still love radio just as much as I ever did.
You were at KNX and probably other stations as well, because when you worked at Shadow Traffic, you worked for a number of stations. KHTS, our hometown station here in Santa Clarita, California, is basically low on the totem pole. We have to do a lot of timing and whatnot to make sure we meet that traffic report. And if we're not ready to go, often they move along to somebody else. But it was a game, and we worked it out. And then great to have you back on here. I miss the old days. I know you don't. And you've been busy since. You're writing. You're doing, I want to say some radio somewhere. I don't know. Somewhere in the world today, your voice is on some news story or something. Yeah, you're doing a lot of writing, currently unemployed. So that's great. I mean, it's not great.
Well,
I mean, I'm just keeping it real.
Like everybody else, I got laid off in journalism. I mean, like everybody else, I got laid off like last November. And so but I had this novel in the works, right? So I'm like, well, I'm unemployed. I might as well just finish it. So I don't know if it's any good or not. It's about a reporter in Los Angeles. Anyway, I wanted to backtrack real quick and say, since I'm a name dropper, that Jim and I used to work together at KNX for many years, as a matter
That's
of fact.
That's what I hear. That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was always really nice to see you coming in, Jim, because you were always really kind. And, you know, it's not easy to stay in a good mood in LA radio sometimes. It's very fast-paced.
But that's true.
But Brooke, have you ever worked on a game show before?
From I have Sony not. Pictures Studios, it's America's Game. Ladies and gentlemen, here are the stars of our show, Pat Sajak and Matt O'Hoy.
Thank you, Jim.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a win in the bonus round.
Jim Thornton, or as I call him, Thunder Jim Thornton. He is a radio personality here in SoCal and maybe somewhere else. I don't know. He came here in the 80s at all of 19 years old and never looked back. And a year later, he was working in radio and broadcasting. And it's a remarkable story. We all watched Wheel of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune, of course, dropped in 1975 when Charles passed away. They had auditions for a new announcer. So Jim knocked on a door and he got the gig. And since 2010, he is the announcer of Wheel of Fortune and Celebrity Wheel of Fortune. And he's done some fill-in stuff for The Price is Right with the late Bob Barker. A great resume for Jim, as well as some voiceover stuff, some video games, Monsters, Inc. and WALL-E. That too.
Cool.
Jim Thornton, welcome to Conversations Radio.
Hey, thank you, Mike and Brooke, and so good to see you both again. And how nice that you guys are doing this. Yeah, what an interesting, you know, everybody has an interesting story, though. Brooke, I mean, Mike, and you know, I think we work our way through this broadcasting business. And a friend of mine, Rich Fields, who was an announcer on The Price is Right for so many years, after I didn't get it, he got it. He has done an audio book that I listened to. And boy, his story is so similar to mine. He's a little older than me, a few years. But, you know, you come out, used to be where you'd come out west, and like he did and I did from West Virginia. And you just, you know, you put one foot in front of the other, right? And keep working and just see where it winds up, man. It's never what you really exactly think it's going to be, but you don't know.
Tell me That's about Huntington. Sure. Huntington in West Virginia. Tell me about that.
Yeah, a great place to be from and to grow up. And I go back there pretty often. My dad and stepmom live close to where we have a house there on the Ohio side of the river. We have an old 1800s pre-Civil War house that used to sit across from what was then Virginia.
Wow.
You know, when it was built. Yeah, so we get back there, you know, fairly often. It's a beautiful town. If you can go through West Virginia, definitely stop in Huntington. Marshall University, go Herd. Went there for a year before I moved out here. But it's near and dear to my heart.
So this was the early 80s for you. You got a wild hair, and you'd done some broadcasting stuff in in West Virginia as well, right? Before you left?
Well, just, I mean, the college radio. I you know, WMUL was a little Marshall University radio station for my, when I was there that year. And they just, you flipped on the transmitter. It was 1,000-watt stereo. Oh, wow. It was mono FM.
Oh,
from
okay,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, from Smith Music Hall up on top of the building. But I did also worked at a TV station because I was, had a, like a mentorship program that I was involved in my senior year. And they hired me. After high school, it was great. I was camera and audio and lighting and stuff, you know, production assistant, making, I think, $4 an hour. And, you know.
That sounds about right.
So that was better than minimum wage.
About that now, too. So,
yeah, right. That was a union job, too. I was NABET.
At NABET, yeah. My mom was NABET, actually. She worked for KGO in San Francisco back in the. So, yeah, I know it very well. And Jesus, sounds like your story, Brooke. You got started in radio.
Well, yeah, except I have to say that one of the things that gave me a really good early start, which I didn't acknowledge back then because I didn't understand how much it helped me, was that my dad is a broadcast guy. He worked in San Diego for a very long time, which is why I left San Diego, because I was trying to, I didn't want anybody to know, right? I wanted people to consider me without my family.
Sure.
So my dad was he was a stadium announcer for the San Diego Padres, for the Soccers, and so on.
Oh, wow.
And Bruce Binkowski. And I never considered that as privilege. I just thought that it was like my dad's boring thing, you know, sports guy, whatever. I'm never going to do that. And then I just fell in love with radio when I was 18. And that was it. I just, I never wanted to do anything else besides radio, and then later radio journalism. And now it's just all forms of journalism. But because of that, and because my grandfather ran a newspaper in San Diego here, and my mom worked at the newspaper, which is how she met my dad. So I'm like this third generation journalist, which I never ever took into consideration until, I don't know, like 3 years ago. I'm like, wait a second, that, you know, that's actually really cool. I should talk about that more. But my very early jobs, I definitely got them because, or rather, I got in the door, I got the time of day because my last name was Binkowski. I found out later that my dad went around and was like, you know, just so you know, she's very squirrely. So I got hired despite that. But yeah, so I'm not just a lifer, I'm an intergenerational lifer. I couldn't have escaped it, you know, to save my life, I suppose.
Very cool.
Jeez. Jim, you came here, like I said, you came to L.A., and again, was this your first time in L.A., by the way, when you came in the 80s?
Uh-huh.
So you really
friend of mine convinced me to come out here. Mm-hmm. My first time being here, yeah.
A lot different than Huntington, I think.
Yeah, it was, I met a guy in a class, I was very musical also, I sang and stuff, and it was this performing group, and he said, I'm going to L.A., blah, 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 and you know, it was so kind of cliche, I guess. He has since moved back east and is in Pennsylvania, I think. But we moved to Burbank. I was right there by the Warner Brothers Studios, by Burbank Studios. And man, you know, making no money. It was scary, but exciting. And, you know, you starve and you, whatever. We didn't get quite homeless, you know, but we were there were a few times when we were late with the rent.
I think California is like that, though. California, I mean, if you've been here your whole life, you're set.
But right.
If you come out here without a plan, and I worked at Universal Studios for a number of years, we had a lot of starving actors that came to LA to seek their fame in Hollywood, and ended up going back home because it just didn't work out for them. You know, the work just wasn't there. But you came out and you had success on your mind, and you mentioned in an earlier interview that you used to wander onto the Warner Brothers set. We call that trespassing today, but tell me about that.
They called it that then too, but nobody stopped me, you know, and I just, I looked like a kid. I who knows, maybe they thought I was an actor or something, but walked around the stages and the sets and everything and then left, you know? Yeah.
And now security there is like really, really tight.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, yeah, you'd be conspicuous. But it was neat. And, you know, it was funny, a wonderful guy, Phil McKeon, he was starring in a show called Alice back then.
Yes.
It was still in production.
Yes.
He was 6 months older than me. He just passed away a couple of years ago. Sweetest guy. I worked with him at KNX. He did some production. Do you remember, was he there, Brooke, when you were there? Yeah.
Yes, sweetest I remember guy. The name. Phil. Yeah, wait, I remember Phil. Yes,
Phil.
Yeah.
Well, he was, yeah, he was Tommy, the little kid on Alice. And
what?
So, yeah, wow. On the TV show Alice, that's Phil McKeon. Yeah. And his sister, Nancy, who people know as well. It's so funny that we, you know, those little things 20 years later or whatever, we work together.
Remember the
Janice has been just this amazing hub of people who have gone on to do just great things.
It really has. Yeah.
Yeah. Phil McKeon was on every single issue of Tiger Beat and Teen Beat. And,
yeah.
he was the heartthrob there for sure back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is an amazing backstory for you because you came out here. I mean, did you have a plan really, or did you not have a plan?
Not really. No, I just told my dad I wanted to spread my wings. And he said, I think you're making a mistake. You should finish up college, blah, blah, blah. Which was the pat dad answer. I don't fault him for that. And I just had to try it. And so I did. I knew I wanted to be in, always wanted to do radio since I was like 8 years old. And I always also wanted to be that guy on the TV, the person you heard but didn't necessarily see. I think that I was affected at a very small age. I was fascinated by The Wizard of Oz and the guy in the guy who pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, and Gary Owens, my earliest memories. And I got to work a little bit with him when I was the announcer at Channel 13. Gary Owens, you know, KORN. Yeah. And it was such a nice man. But I think that also affected me. So, yeah, I knew those were things I wanted to do, television and radio and whatever else.
Gary
the
Owens
first
certainly
time I sat in front of a radio board, an audio board, rather, I knew how to work it. It was just like I'd been in radio stations and I wanted to touch them, you know, and wanted to play with the pots and everything. And so the first time I sat in front of it as a board op, as like this 18-year-old baby board op, I was just like, this is it. It was like, it just clicked. It was just right.
Yeah. It's power. It's a fun sense of control, but it's almost like you're performing, you're giving something of yourself to people, right? I mean, you're creating something for people. It's, I think,
yes,
Brooke, you know?
Yes. That's exactly what I think about it too. It's audio magic. I mean, I have always just thought of radio more than any other communication system as magical, because you can do this theater of the mind. You can, you know, it's very portable. It's very powerful, and you can hear each other's voices, and then you're not distracted by how they look. It's just
right
to me. It is the medium, but I like them
it
all.
It is. It's so wonderfully intimate, yet. You know, you know that there are however many people are out there, but it's the magic comes when you have that connection one-on-one with somebody out there. You can't see, but you just know that whether it's you're talking to yourself or whatever, you know, a different version of you or a best friend or whatever. It's so wonderful.
I used to say, my mom's listening. I can guarantee that my mom's listening. Sorry, Mike.
Yeah.
What would motivate you to work on a game show? And I asked that because obviously I'm sure others tried out for the announcing job on Wheel of Fortune, but you got it. But take us back. Obviously you went to audition. How did that all come about?
Well, I mean, again, this is something I wanted to do since I was 7, 8 years old, whatever game shows that was right in there. I wanted that, you know, announcing, I wanted to be Ed McMahon, whatever. So that's exactly what I knew that I was cut out for, that kind of thing, but those jobs don't come up every day. So you do whatever you do. My name came up with the producers after Charlie O'Donnell passed away. My agent called and he said that, you know, Charlie O'Donnell has passed. Well, yeah, I said, yeah, I know. I heard that. I hadn't, you know, I didn't know, like sit there with a spring loaded tape waiting to go out when somebody dies, you know, but so I hadn't sent anything in, but he said, I think they're jazzed on you. Or they're hot on you, you know? And I said, wow, that's unbelievable. I was a Wheel of Fortune. Wow. You know? And so I went in and met with Harry Friedman and the other producers and people who were there. And it was like, you know, I said, if this lasts one day, it has fulfilled a childhood lifelong dream of mine. So thank you. And they were so nice. It was like we knew each other already. And, you know, they're just good people.
When you got word that you got the part, what were you doing at that moment?
Oh, well, that was I knew that I got the job on March 12th of 2011. I had done the shows and I knew it was, I'm not one to count my chickens even after they hatch, you know? Okay. I wasn't like, oh, I think I got that. Never, ever have I been like that ever in my life. So I wasn't like counting on anything, but I knew things were looking pretty good. They kept inviting me back. That's a good sign. But Harry called me to his office and said, you know, I think we can make a deal if you're interested in the job. It's your, you know, but we can't say anything. I said, well, of course, you know, that was wonderful. And I, sure. I couldn't say anything because they wanted to wait till June to announce it, I think. So,
yeah.
You know, but of that year. And so I didn't get to go to New Orleans that year. But that's where I was. It was, you know, oddly, it was, I think, the day of the big tsunami over in Japan, 12th of March. Does that make sense?
Wow.
Yeah.
Things you remember. But it was, yeah, that it was one of those, for me, one of those huge moments in my life. Huge.
Happy work anniversary. Well, 2 days
thank
ago.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. A couple of days ago. That's right. Yeah. My stepmom's birthday also. Yeah, the 12th of March. Yeah. Yeah.
It is a really a success story for you on this. And again, the Wheel of Fortune, as I mentioned when I opened the show, worldwide, I mean, it's different, you know, countries are doing their versions of Wheel mm-hmm. of Fortune. You are the voice behind, you're the announcer on the show. And again, Wheel of Fortune getting its start in the 70s. 1975, you were just a kid.
And I was.
You are, you know, many years later, and you're yeah. now in that spot. And you've also done some voiceover stuff, too. But you got to work with Bob Barker on Price is yeah. Right, and that's kind of neat as well. God rest his soul. Really part of the nicest guy, next to Pat, obviously, in game show, and so iconic. Yeah, that you got to do that. But Wheel of Fortune now, you guys tape a lot of shows at once, and this is your off week. So tell me how it works.
We do 2 days of taping. Usually we do 6 shows in 1 day, unless there's a theme that we can't sort of squeeze in that 6th show and then put that 6th show somewhere else. You know, like if it's a really, I don't know, some of the Christmas holiday shows, sponsored shows, tie-ins, things like that, where the set is decorated a certain way, we only do 5, but otherwise it'll be 6 shows. And we do that, and we work 36 days a year, basically. The celebrity shows add some more tape days, so let's say 40 to 42 days, something like that, all told. But wow. It's a crazy schedule, and they don't give me time off for, you know, jury duty or sick leave, anything like
really?
That.
Wow.
No.
And you're on the Sony lot, and again the soundstage mm-hmm. there, kind of iconic, I understand.
Oh yeah, they taped, they filmed The Wizard of Oz there, and guess who this is? It's another sales call. Wow, bye bye, and that's real life. But it's yeah, that's where they did the tornado scene for The Wizard of Oz on stage 11, which is where we are. The whole wow. movie was done on our lot, which was MGM.
Yeah,
how it's cool. great.
Back mm-hmm. in the day.
I love that.
And the great Jeopardy as well is done there. Mm-hmm, right next door, mm-hmm. I take it.
Yes, that's on stage 10. Our stages are connected together by the air conditioning ducts. So
oh,
if
wow.
I want to like sneak over there, I can... never mind, I have a pass to get in. But yeah, good people, both places. Really, you know, I'm lucky to get to where... And we all know how fortunate we are.
Yeah.
Nobody there is up thinking there's, you know, hot potatoes. It's always been like that.
I've got to think through all of it when Alex Trebek passed away. It must have been a very, very dark time at Sony, I'm thinking.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. He was, you know, I just had a chance to really talk to him one time. My wife and I, we were waiting on a flight at, it was kind of a semi-private, it's a little JSX, I think it is, the little airline out of Burbank.
Yeah.
But we were flying up, they were giving awards for Wheel, and I happened to get to go. And but we had a few minutes, we had like an hour or whatever, and he and his wife, Jean, were talking to us for a good long time. It was just so neat. And he would, you know, talk to anybody. He's just so approachable and so nice. And he worked with his hands. You know, he was the kind of guy, he would do drywall and plumbing in his house. I mean, that's my kind of guy, because I do that kind of stuff too, you know.
And from Canada too, I believe.
Yeah, well, forgive him for that.
Well, but, I gotta tell you,
yeah.
Canadians are nicest folks. They never
yeah.
get, they're never mad, they never get pissed off.
I know.
They're just really, really friendly, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
like, hey, I just egged your car. Oh, that's okay. Hey, come on
I know.
In, you know. And you watch.
I know.
You watch the guys playing hockey, and they get into fights, and it's like they fight, and then they're like smiling afterwards. They're like totally
yeah.
happy, you know. It's the funny thing. So that might explain why Alex is such a nice guy. But
He was such a nice guy. Yeah, I think he would have been nice no matter what. But yeah, you're right. He's like nice squared because the Canadians are. They're like that. You know, they're just good people.
Now they've got Ken Jennings.
Yeah.
And of course, Ken, a legend as well, because he was once a contestant.
I think that was a perfect choice. I mean, you know, why not have somebody who was, I mean, he obviously knows the show inside and out. He's a big fan of the show. Yeah. And, you know, that's great. Rather than pick whoever it is to come out and kind of learn the ropes and everything, you know, he knew it. And so he's done a great job.
Now, do you guys both shows tape on the same day?
No, we share a lot of the same crew.
Okay.
So they'll tape like a Monday, Tuesday. We tape Thursday, Friday, something like that usually. And we do have a lot of the same people. We have a different set of, you know, technical people, director and associate director and all that kind of stuff. But and graphics people to some extent. But yeah,
Lately, every single show on Jeopardy is a championship show.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Yeah.
We're going through a lot of that. So, but, Wheel of Fortune, definitely an iconic game show. Everyone knows it. Everyone knows Pat Sajak and Vanna White. And there you are. You've got your own little booth, office, whatever, what have you. And you've earned that. And again, matching microphones, the one at home, the same as the one in the studio.
Yeah.
But, take us through your day because, you know, you're in Southern California. Now you're in Northern California at the moment. But you do call LA home, obviously. Early call times at Sony Pictures for the show.
Yeah, 8:45. I get there at about 5:45 though to beat the traffic, because Brooke knows this, you know, and you know this, Mike, from just living in LA and having to drive. You know, if you can avoid traffic, do it. And so I get there early and hang out in my little dressing room, talk to people, and I'm just, you know, I'm always just talking to everybody.
And by the way,
Angelina pride when it comes to like avoiding traffic. I'm like, oh, it's fine. All I need to do is take the 215 instead of 15, and I can just go all the way west. And this is absolutely foreign to San Diegans. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, oh, it's fine. Take 3 freeways, it'll take 20 minutes, no problem. And they're like, this makes no sense. But yeah, it is. It's a point of pride. You have to know where you're going and how to get there, and you have to know how to get there fast.
You do.
And, by the way, speaking of LA, I was watching KTLA this morning, and the driverless cabs are once again on the road. They won't go on freeways, but they'll go on the regular streets. Yeah, one of the reporters and the cameraman hop on in and take one, and it was pretty incredible, and apparently he was very happy with it. The cameraman was in the back seat, and apparently he didn't put his seatbelt on, and they knew that, and the cab company who runs this show actually called the cab and said, one of your passengers has no seatbelt on. So they're watching you. They're watching you the whole time that you're in this taxi.
Thanks.
But, so.
Well, that's the world we live in now.
LA traffic.
Ooh, that is creepy.
You know?
The things you've done, Bill, did I tell you Bill?
Oh, I'll answer to anything. It's all right.
by the way, Bill Thomas says hello, too.
Oh, Bill.
And you're also friends with Chuck Clifford.
Yes. Yeah.
I've known Chuck for years. He's a huge ham radio buff as well. So
nice.
I forgot that. Yeah.
I love my ham radio people.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
But here you are. You're at the prime of your life here. You're doing this show. Does it ever get old, or is every day a new beginning there?
The only things, let's see, I'm trying to think if there's anything. I think that it doesn't get old. I think I'm the kind of guy, I'm grateful for certain things that are now a habit that I probably don't even have to think about, because when you get into it, everything is so new and foreign, and you're just freaking out about every little thing. I am, you know, you want it to go well. And so, but no, it's always like a new day. It's always like a new day, and every audience is different. I say every single time I'm there is like a birthday party. That's the way I look at it. People are so nice who come to the show. It's not like you have to win them over with your, you know, stupid jokes or whatever. And my jokes are pretty stupid. I'll just say that right now.
You've got history in linguistics as well.
Sí, hablo español.
Yeah.
Mi abuela nació en México. My grandmother was born in Mexico. And
I never that inspired knew that.
Me. Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I learned a few words from her, but I can't repeat them. But no, but she really inspired me. I would hear her and her sister talking Spanish when I was little, and it more inspired me. So when I was a teenager, I sat down to really, really learn it. And I have an ear for mimicry, so it allowed me to do that.
Now, you're the one go ahead, Brooke. Go ahead, Brooke.
Oh, sorry. I just got really interested in this. So do you speak fluent Spanish, or do you speak, like, at least, you know...
I'm fluent enough to get by. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. You know, but, it's, again, I get a lot of practice with it too. I speak it with people around the stage and the set and everything. So, yeah.
Now, awesome. besides being the announcer, you're also the warm-up guy.
Yes.
So how does that go?
Oh, it's fun. It's like I said, that's the part that's like a big birthday party. I go out and tell some dumb jokes, hey, did you hear about the explosion at the French cheese factory today? Nobody was hurt, but debris was everywhere.
Ah,
you
it.
Like that? Yeah. Yeah. You know, stupid stuff like that.
But really
they're just dumb jokes.
Solid dad jokes.
Right? They are. And so I just, I talk about like our audience coordinator, Lee. I said, Lee was in a terrible accident the other day. He had his whole left side cut off. He's all right now, but he checked into the Hokey Pokey Clinic and he turned himself around. He's, and I make little goofy things about him, and we just have fun and then give out little swag and stuff. And just people are so nice.
That's really an art as well. The warm-up stuff is definitely an art as well. Now, you lived in Burbank. So this is a night show starring Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
I went to many tapings, and usually what would happen is Freddie DeCordova, he'd come out and intro and say, let's get this party started.
Yeah.
And play a little bit. And then Freddie would go ahead and talk about the show a bit. He'd intro Doc Severinsen. Doc would come out. And then Doc would intro Ed McMahon.
Ed McMahon. Uh-huh.
And then before you knew it, he was starting the show. And then Johnny came out. You know?
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. Because I went to Jay Leno shows as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Johnny's old studio for a time, and then Jay Leno left and then came back. They realized they had a good thing there, and they built a huge stage on NBC's back lot there in Burbank.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay would come out and do the warm-up, so it was pretty cool. He'd come out in Levi's, and then 10 minutes later he was all suited up, caked up, makeup, and he was ready to go.
Isn't that great?
It's
I love that. He's a real performer. Yeah, I saw those too. I saw a couple of times people were from out of town. I went to the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and with Jay Leno. One time I saw a Bob Hope Super Bowl special or something like that, an NFL special or something being taped
what
when somebody
was
in
that?
From out of town.
What year
that
was
would
that?
Have been like 85, 84, 85, so right after I was
there,
here.
You know, because I did one
really?
Of those as well. We went to see the taping of the Tonight Show. So we saw the show and they said, when it's over, come back in. We're going to tape Bob Hope's monologue for this NFL special. And he had this big drop prop with all these lights and stuff. And it was really cool. So Bob Hope, my gosh. And, I think Bob Hope basically owned Toluca Lake back in those days.
He lived in the neighborhood. Yeah. I lived on Warner Boulevard. And the cheap seats, I paid, my roommate and I split the rent. It was $4.25 a month.
Oh, jeez.
And And to us, that was a lot of loot. I mean, that was $212.50 a month each.
Wow. And Brooke, you've been in San Diego your whole life, except for Alaska. Oh.
No, my whole life. No, I was born in San Diego, and then I keep getting dragged back to San Diego, but I do try to escape it. Every few years, I leave, and then I don't want to sound like a lifer. No, I lived in England, actually, when I was a little kid, and I came back when I was about 7 or 8. I was born in San Diego, and then I moved to Atlanta and Alaska and all those places, but then I moved to L.A., and then I came back to San Diego. This is what happened. I came back to San Diego for a visit, and I met a guy.
Oh, yeah. That's how it happens.
That'll happen.
That was 20 years ago, and he's in the other room.
Well, tell him hello. That's great.
So I got to ask you, Jim, because, again, you're a voice, and you're a TV personality as well. But when you're out and about, or if you're on the phone, have you gotten spotted?
Yeah, a couple of times. And people usually they'll more recognize my voice, not necessarily know who it is. They say, "You sound like you ought to be on the TV, or you should be." And I figure it's usually because they've heard me.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm not one of those guys who sounds like I'm just like a walking radio, I hope, you know, but you know what I mean? What we call a puker in the business.
Yeah.
I can, but I don't know. Yeah. I've occasionally, but it's, you know, and I'm on there sometimes. My face is on there, but it's so quick. People don't, whatever, you know.
Well, you've had a chance to much. You and Pat Sajak actually switched seats one time, and you were at the car as well. There's two wheels on the Wheel of Fortune. There's the main wheel.
The big wheel, and there's a bonus wheel.
Now, the bonus wheel, they just kind of wheel that out towards the that's not out there all the time, right? Basically.
Right. We keep it under wraps. It's behind a little curtain. There's a whole little setup there. Matthew, who is our legal guy, he's another Canadian. Good guy. But he makes sure that everything is legal and standards and practices are all satisfied and all that stuff. So I think he's there. And then whoever the person is who puts the cards where they go, there's one $100,000 one or $1 million if somebody is holding the wedge. You know, if they carry the wedge with them, that $100,000 is replaced by $1 million. So, yeah.
I have a kind of left field question for you.
Yeah.
When we worked at KNX, the one in Hollywood, not the one at Miracle Mile, there was all this lore about the building and all these great stories, and there were several people there who absolutely swore it was haunted. Mm-hmm. There were all these legends and superstitions, and I was wondering if there's any legends and superstitions that you have around Wheel of Fortune, or if there's, you know, lore around the show itself.
Good question.
You know, I have heard about it being haunted. You go up in the catwalk. There's a catwalk over the stage. You can walk all the way over the stage. It's really cool. Up in there, I've felt like sometimes, there's a presence, because up there, you find names written on the rafters and in the superstructure up there that go back to the 30s. You know, people who worked on the films, and they took a piece of chalk or whatever and they wrote it up there, and it's still up there. So you definitely feel like they're good ghosts there. But yes, I mean, I'm not really superstitious, but I feel like that place deserves to be haunted. And the little people, Dorothy, Judy Garland, who you know, worked there and stayed at the Culver Hotel, there all these stories, and man, it'd be a shame if that was just the end of it when they died. You know, I love to think that they're just living on somewhere.
What names did you find? That.
Keeping us haunted.
What names did you find?
Oh, I can't remember. These weren't stars. These were just people who worked on the films.
Yeah.
You know, there were grips, gaffers, I don't know, lighting, whatever, smoke machine, you know, so.
When I was in theater years and years ago, when I was a very small child, I was a theater kid.
Yeah.
But we would do that. We would write our names. I remember that was, I thought that was just something that we did. We would write our names somewhere, you know, where they'd stick around. So I guess my name is probably written in a catwalk somewhere in San
cool.
Diego.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, that's
cool. And again, you get caught up in the whole vibe of working in TV as well. And again, my mom worked at KGO TV back in the 60s and 70s and early 80s till she retired. She's passed away. God rest her soul. But I used to go in with her on the weekends. She was the PBX supervisor there. She answered the phones. So I got to meet folks like Tennessee Ernie Ford, Jim Lang. Jim
you met Tennessee Ernie Ford?
Yes. Gypsy Rose Lane.
16
tons.
Right?
Gypsy Rose Lane as well.
Yeah. He used to do a commercial where I grew up, Martha White Flower. He'd say, it's pea picking good. I don't think they had that in California, but he did, this is Martha White Flower. It's pea picking good.
Doesn't sound
whatever
familiar.
That means.
Awesome.
But I would go there on the weekends and watch them set up for stuff. Jim Lang had a game show called Oh My Word. And Jim was a busy guy. Jim Lang would do Oh My Word. He did radio as well at the station. Then he'd fly down to Hollywood to prospect to do the dating game. So he had a lot going on there. Gypsy Rose Lee had her show, and those sets where she can walk into the doors. I've seen those doors. It's pretty cool. As well, Alan Hamill had a show called The Anniversary Game. He had the big board and everything. And that's how he met Suzanne Summers. They were
over
there.
Oh.
But even before that, I would go in, and Studio D was the big studio there at KGO. And this was in the days of black and white, the old cameras with the five lenses on them and everything. Mm. Everything was painted in neutral color, of course, sets. But yeah, you get totally caught up in the vibe. And then the coolest thing is to look up and realize just how high the ceiling is, the flight space. And you realize how enormous this is. And I know things have changed. Obviously, technology has come along. The cameras are better. The lights are cooler, I understand. They've gone to like LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not...
We have LEDs. Yeah, we have incandescents also. We have hundreds of lights that are up in the metal, the supports are. So we still put on a hot show. The days where we have to light the stage all up, it's incandescents. But otherwise, the star background is much cooler. Makes a big difference in my little room.
And you get your own key light too, right?
I do. I have a little backlight and key light and a little camera there, a robotic camera that Ray Gonzalez, he's our robotics guy. Camera 5 is the one that's robotic. It points down at the wheel all the time too. So it's when you're looking through at home and the wheel's going around and around.
Yeah, I'm thinking game shows and sports, really the only ones that are using camera guys anymore. If you look at TV news, it's all automatic cameras. I know,
and I talk about this with people, and I don't try to, I usually don't talk to people a lot younger about it, but I don't know if it's lost on them how mysterious the world used to be and how important people's jobs were and how it was just so cool. It took all these people to do all these things, all these rooms full of equipment. You didn't know what they did, but now they're just a guy on a laptop or a gal on a laptop or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. It's the same with, you look at Google Earth or something. Well, that used to be National Geographic or whatever. Yeah. We would look through the magazine or go to the encyclopedia to do a report, not just go and tick, and pretend like we're there.
My only regret in radio is I never spinned any records or threw any carts in the cart machine because it was all on a computer.
Really?
Oh, no.
You never did that?
No.
That's one of the great pleasures of radio. The best thing about carts. Oh, carts are the best. Let me tell you about carts. The best thing about carts is if you have a temper tantrum in the studio, because you didn't hit your post or you said the F word on the air or something like that, nothing would break. They would never shatter. They were the most durable things ever. You could just throw them. I mean,
I saw carts go flying more than once. I won't say where and who, but yeah.
They're indestructible. Yeah. They really are indestructible for sure. And you go into production, you cart that up, and people had, back in our day, they had the splicing block,
Right.
Certainly a lot easier now. And KGO, of course, in San Francisco, they've since moved and have... totally changed their format. They were talk radio for years, a lot of big voices out of that, and KSFO as well. KGO did all talk. Everything was carts. They had two turntables there. They were covered up, never used them because they never played music, basically. And then KSFX is the rock station that was down in the basement in the same building. And of course, you go in there, and of course, there was this haze floating in the air. We know what was going on there. It's really changed. And again, you worked at a college station, so was a lot of your stuff you guys had donated?
At Marshall? It was a university, so I'm assuming a state supplied whatever. But yeah, it was the stuff was pretty old. But we had carts, and we would, and I guess they had a turntable there too. Yeah, but most of it was carted, I think.
Because often what would happen is when stations upgraded their gear, they would donate it to schools and what have you. And
That probably happened. It was kind of like that. Yeah, I remember what was on Van Halen, Jump was on at that time. I remember playing that song and a few others. But yeah, this was 83, 84. So
was this on vinyl?
No, it was carded up. I mean, yeah. I think we had turntables in there, but I never spun them. I did do some vinyl at KLAC in Los Angeles when they were country. You know, I worked as a hot country disc jockey at Westwood One. And it was such a fun job. And the last days of KLAC playing country, that was 93. I was there up until that very last little point. And it was so great. You know, music that my dad appreciated, and even my grandparents would have appreciated, but playing that old stuff, you know.
Well, yeah.
The old standards and stuff, Patsy Cline and Johnny Cash. And you know.
Yeah, Chuck Clifford was there, and Chuck was there. And
yeah.
When they flipped, he went to Westwood. So,
so my first radio job, besides college radio, my first board op job out of college radio was actually at K-Pop, which is a San Diego station, long defunct, may it rest in peace. But we played Patsy Cline, we played Sarah Ford. It was all wartime stuff. It was fantastic. It was a little bit later, so that was in the 90s, but it happened to be right when the swing craze hit. So all of a sudden, we had all these young listeners. So they would put me out front and center when I was like 20. I'd be like, yeah, I love this stuff.
Isn't that great?
Sinatra, I'm like,
and now
it's
all automated.
Yeah.
It's all automated. By the way, speaking of music, I do want to do shout out. Gino Michelini passed away. A week or so ago. So God rest his soul. Of course, Gino was at, I believe, KLOS for.
Yeah, that's right. I remember him.
So it's sad in a way because, you know, when I came to LA in '80, I got tired of San Francisco. I got tired of the fog. but, you know, KLOS and KMET were the thing, you know. Mm. And, rock and roll. And then Mark and Brian came along. And
I remember that. 85-ish? 80, or 86, 87, something somewhere on there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when they came to town. Yeah.
And Mark Thompson, the nicest guy, he was out here in Santa Cruz. I ran into him all the time. Oh. And then he went to The Sound, and then The Sound flipped to Christian Station. And it's what happens. And KFWB, I was shocked when they flipped, because that was, you know, an iconic station too for news radio, and even before that.
And it hurts.
I believe,
just
yeah.
Think about it.
And I think Gene Autry used to own that, as a matter of fact, I believe.
Was that his? KMPC.
Yeah, KMPC, rather.
Was the one he owned. Was WB, was that Westinghouse Broadcasting? What does it stand for?
So,
I forget.
Yeah.
But those were, there was a rivalry between KNX and KFWB back in the day, a friendly rivalry. We all, you know, everybody knew each other.
Sure,
and
sure.
I shouldn't say we, because I was not part of that reporter clique. I was a traffic boy. I was lucky enough. David G. Hall got me into that as anchor man, and I did not earn my chops really the way they did. But there was that rivalry. I remember that being there. You know, so.
The rivalry was always great fun, and it was always just such a buzz to scoop the other reporters.
Yep. Yeah,
but you earned your chops, and nobody—I don't think anybody questioned it. And I mean, you know how people are. We would all like, and nobody ever said a thing about you that was ever negative.
That's nice. That's very nice.
The Southern California radio market, especially in LA, so huge, and it every day there's something new changes. And one day it's, English, and then next day it's another language. Or one day it's news, next day it's a pastor talking, you know.
Yeah.
And it just changes constantly. And you guys have hung in. Obviously, you've kind of cemented your future there on Wheel. Wheel of Fortune, of course, here locally in L.A. every night at 7:30. And we get to watch that. And things are going to be changing on that show soon, too, because Pat Sajak is leaving.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be such a weird change, you know. 13 years with Pat. I mean, he's so incredibly fast. He just unnerves me every time he gets that line.
Yeah.
Why didn't I think of that? You know, he's just so fast. And I love working with him. And Ryan, I met once. I don't think we met before then, but we knew each other of each other because of so much time in radio.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a great fit, and I'm really looking forward to him coming in.
I don't know how Ryan Seacrest does it all. He's involved in so much stuff, so many projects.
I know.
And Wheel of Fortune is going to take, you know, a lot of time for him. I mean, a lot of time.
And I think he recognizes that. Yeah, it's not something to be taken for granted or whatever. None of it is. I think he's of that good. He lives it and breathes it and since he was little, all three of us, I think it gets in your DNA from probably a very early age. And now, I think that's a wonderful place.
And Vanna White is staying. So that's great. And she's been this for a while too. And looks as good now as she did from day one. Just an amazing, amazing presence on this show. And very
it's good. All a complete act. Don't buy that nice person act.
So again, the board, the letter board, obviously too, a big part of the show, and that's gone through some changes too. Now it's gone from flipping blocks to now it's just one big screen.
Right. So that started in 1997. Yeah, where we went electronic, so Vanna would press the little side of it or whatever, and it would light up. I don't know if that's what they would do in 1997. I think it was. It was pressure sensitive up until just a couple of years ago. Then we stopped, and now we do her finger crosses like a laser beam kind of thing, and it lights up the letter if the letter is triggered. So
now, have they ever fooled around and like put funny messages on there and stuff?
No, I don't think they've done that. I think they're real careful because they don't want somebody to take a picture of it and it go. But you can fake that if you wanted to anyway. And I'm sure they do. People definitely do. You know.
And I got to think the reset is a lot easier now, too, because before every block had a letter on it, then you had to change those out. So that must have taken
used
time.
To take. Yeah. And I wasn't there with the show, obviously. But it used to take an hour to change out everything for it to do one show. Jeez. It took an hour. You know, people like Vanna have told me. And there was a guy over the. Over the wheel on a scaffold. That's how they got the picture from above. Now we do it robotically. One time they forgot to, they needed to let him down with a scissor lift. They forgot to let him down during lunch hour. So he needed to get down and go pee. So he got stuck up there.
Wow.
Yeah. That happened at NBC, I believe. Somebody told me that story.
Yeah. That was on NBC. Probably, that's right. I forgot about that.
You know, yeah.
But
NBC, but, then CBS, and then now we're, you know, syndicated everywhere since I think 91. So. Yeah,
and all the CBS,
and we are huge in Canada, by the way. We're huge in Canada.
And now
all the CBS game shows are now done in Glendale.
Yes.
It used to
which is weird.
Yeah, it is kind of strange, but it's they're all doing that. You know, all of the NBC stuff now is on the Universal Studios a lot.
So right.
So it's all there, including the local station Channel 4 here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be back in the day, you could basically line up at the Price is Right at CBS TV City in the morning, and then they'd pick you to come on. It was very, very simple. Now, of course, it's a little more involved. Wheel of Fortune, though, I've got to think that there's some sort of test or screening that the contestants go through, because they really, some of these people are very sharp. They get these puzzles in like three letters. I mean, it amazes me.
Some are really good, and some you think, oh, come on. You know, it's funny. It's just like at home. But yeah, we look for people who have enthusiasm. So if you ever wanted to be on Wheel of Fortune, enthusiasm is the big, you know, that'll get their attention, the producers. Yeah. But yeah, we do three levels, basically. There's a Zoom meeting that is the final kicker, I think, when we get their audition. It starts with an audition, I think, usually a video submission, but not always. And then we do a test with them, and
Do things ever go wrong? Things freeze up or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. You know, the biggest thing for us, I think, is sometimes a puzzle board will have an issue, something like that. Sometimes there'll be an issue with scoring, but they're remarkably good and they're really, really fast in scoring. And that usually doesn't have an issue. Sometimes I will stop down, and probably this is the most common reason to stop, is that Pat thinks that they may have said an S, or that it's a pronunciation that's a little bit off or something like that, where they didn't make it plural. It's supposed to be, or what have you, you know,
but the wheel's never gone flying off or anything.
Not yet, but you know, it may, you know, go into outer space one of these days and it'll start a whole new conspiracy theory.
Were you a game show fan when you were a kid? Did you like watching game shows when you were a kid?
Mm-hmm. I did. One of my favorites, I got to meet Peter Marshall, by the way, name drop here. I got to meet him a few years ago. I was a huge fan of Peter Marshall and Hollywood Squares when I was a little kid. And he went to my high school, Huntington High School in West Virginia. So he's from my hometown, which is neat too. I like that. I like Dick Clark, $25,000 pyramid. I did not appreciate it at the time being a little kid, but I've seen reruns. Gene Rayburn and Match Game, 70 whatever. Oh, it was so great.
That was
That
was a great game show, but again, the set was kind of hokey. If you look at it,
yeah,
it's kind of like really gritty and grainy, and they've got they come out on that turntable, and there were certain times you could see like a rope pulling it around. Uh-huh. And and those are the days too. Again, and Brooke, you know, because you're in your 40s now, so you watched old TV as well. But you can watch shows from the 70s and 60s, and if you look carefully, because the quality is so good, you'll see microphone shadows on the wall and all kinds of stuff.
It's So I never had a television. I was one of those people for the longest time. I didn't have a TV for ages. And I'd be like, I read. You know, I was in school, honestly. And then when 2020 hit, I didn't really have anywhere to go. And we had AMC. And so I thought, well, why not just start familiarizing myself with all these old movies, these wonderful old movies, the places I've seen, I've worked at where some of them were filmed, for God's sake, and I hadn't seen them. So I started watching them all, and I got quite an education, but because of HD, I can see the mic shadows, I can see like the sort of attenuated flattened backgrounds. I can see all these things that I probably wouldn't have been able to see if I'd watched them when they were originally broadcast.
Yeah.
By the way, it's fantastic. I'm so glad I'm finally educating myself.
That's really cool.
I analyze too, because sometimes it's so obvious, you know what to look for, you know, and like just look at a wall and the floor, and you'll say, where is there a gap there, you know? So it tells me it's probably on wheels or something, but anyway, but you see that. But, you know, again, you guys are both part of history in Southern California. Certainly CBS, I mean, TV City, my God, everything was done there. The Carol Burnett Show, the Smothers Brothers, I think, were there as well. Glenn Campbell had a show there, I believe. All in the Family was taped there. I mean, so many iconic shows were filmed in that facility.
A lot of soap operas too.
Yeah, Young and the Restless is still there.
The Young and the Listless. Yeah.
Yeah. One of our guests on here a lot is Lily Brooks O'Brien. She's on Young and the Restless, and she goes in, and it's pretty incredible. They tape every day. They're taping.
Yeah.
But I believe Carol Burnett's studio was actually upstairs. It was like another floor, and others used that as well. Sonny and Cher had a show there. And a lot of them on NBC too, Flip Wilson and those guys laughing, of course.
I was excited. I got to use Carol Burnett's dressing room. That was my dressing room when I was at Price is Right.
Wow.
It had been her. I mean, it wasn't then, but it had been. And
cool.
Yeah, that was good. You're right. Oh, sorry, Miss Burnett. I'll just do my Tim Conway.
That is so cool.
It was neat. Yeah.
The 60s and 70s, I think, really were the heyday for these networks.
Yeah.
Obviously, the 60s and 70s as well, NBC was laughing. And even later on in the 80s, there were still remnants of laughing being done there. The hallway that NBC had, that big hallway that you could walk through in the back.
Yeah.
And, and certainly that was that. And then, of course, CPO Sharkey with Don Rickles.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
The Tonight Show taped right next door to CPO Sharkey. Sharkey.
Yeah.
And there was a episode where it's actually on YouTube. You can see it, where Don Rickles hosted the Tonight Show one night in place of Johnny Carson. And Don Rickles, of course, is just off the charts anyway. God rest his soul, too.
He was.
But Johnny had obviously a bad smoking habit, as many did on TV back in those days. And he had a cigarette box on his desk. And apparently Rickles picked it up and slammed it, and it broke. And next day, Johnny showed up and the show started. He went to get a cigarette, and the top fell off the box. And he goes, did Rickles do this? You know? He goes, and Johnny had brought that cigarette box from New York. I mean, right after, Dick Parr and stuff, and he was there. So he goes, I'm going to fix them. So he goes in, they go into Rickles' studio, and again, the two stages are connected, so it's easy to switch back and forth with cameras. And
yeah.
Stuff. And he went in there, and it was the funniest bit that he did.
Yeah.
And that's great. I know that Rickles was totally surprised. Carson comes in, he goes, stop the taping. You know.
Yeah, Johnny was great for stuff like that. The best one ever, and it's on YouTube. Look it up. I don't remember seeing it live, but when they pulled a prank on Joan Rivers, where Margaret Thatcher, Prime Minister, sound and look-alike was there saying, you know, I don't really appreciate that you're talking about the royal family that way. And she was right on. And because Joan Rivers had been bagging all over the royal family, making all these jokes, you know. Oh, it's hilarious. The setup, everything. So you can check that out on YouTube.
Late night drama. She started her show on Fox. She had her own late night show on Fox. And Johnny Carson was very upset about it. It was very well known.
Oh, yeah.
And she was never allowed on his show again. That was it.
Oh, I've forgotten that. Yeah. You didn't
and you
step
realize,
on Johnny's toes.
Just how fickle it is, the whole thing. But all that's safe on the Sony stage, Wheel of Fortune spinning round and around. And it's, let me ask you, Brooke, trivia. The wheel, does it spin clockwise or counterclockwise?
Clockwise.
Right. Very good.
Exactly. Unless you're in Australia.
That's the other way.
Oh, yeah.
And it spins backwards, right?
In the Southern Hemisphere, it spins the other way around.
Yeah. And the money comes back to us.
This has been it's been a real hoot here. I got to tell you, we are winding down. It's been a great hour. So much for 30 minutes.
I know.
I knew going in it wasn't going to be 30 minutes.
And again,
we'll pass the hat.
You can also hear Jim on Monsters, Inc., which I love. Great animated feature.
Yeah.
And you were like an announcer on that? Is that what you were?
I said, the future is bright at Monsters Incorporated. We're part of your life. We power your car. And all this, the part that's in the beginning of the film. Yeah.
And then on WALL-E as well. Now, WALL-E, a tremendous success.
Yeah.
Panned by a few. I liked it. Although you feel very bad.
And I wasn't
bad
in the movie. I was in the... I was in the bonus material.
Okay.
I did this similar kind of voice. It's but anyway, so go find that DVD, the box set, and you look at the bonus material. Do that tonight, and then you'll hear me.
WALL-E was
there. That is so cool.
It was really the first time I saw a animated character who was going through loneliness and depression. It was
I remember that. Yeah, and everybody would ride around on those little hovercraft or whatever, right? And nobody walked.
And then you did video games. So that's a dream for voiceover in video games.
I was in Mafia 2 as this kind of character. I forget what it was. This is years ago. But yeah, that was fun. And a couple of others. Yeah, those were neat things to do. Really
and that's
cool.
That's really a thing as well for voiceover folks is the whole video thing.
It
video
is.
Games. As technology evolves, the need for voiceover artists, good voiceover artists, is high in demand because you've got toys.
I just wish,
video games.
I, on a selfish note, and it's not video games, but it's, I mean, I'm probably would be a union of one, but my voice is all, I wish I had a penny for every time somebody wins or plays the slot machines with my voice on them.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're all
are you on those
place.
Too?
Yeah, you know.
Oh my gosh!
So. Which ones? Which ones?
Well, the Wheel of Fortune machines.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So you know.
That's so cool.
Again, she doesn't leave San Diego too often, so she doesn't get out of San Diego. So of course, not a lot of slot machines in San Diego.
But it's I love that kind of stuff. It's so cool to just be a little. Just some at any given moment, somebody might be listening to me just saying like, you know, sorry, better luck next time.
That's
what it is about like radio and audio that I love so much is you can scatter little pieces of yourself just everywhere.
Yeah, it's true.
And make a positive impact. I don't know.
Wheel of Fortune, of course, as they're all licensed out. You know, you got your permission. You can't just design a machine and say, hey, you know, let's call it Wheel of Fortune.
Right.
Obviously, there's some rights there. A lot of shows do that now. Deal or No Deal has machines, but they also have, if you go on a cruise ship, on cruise lines, they've got an actual live Deal or No Deal show.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you can actually go in there and play.
Good
they got
them.
A big screen, and it's like, you know, the cruise director usually hosts it, and you get these pull tabs, and you play along with the person that gets, they call a number. It's like being like automated bingo. They call the number on the card. That person gets to play the game. Everyone else that's in the audience plays too, but they got like pull tabs. So as they opens cases virtually, they pull their tabs, and you can win money that way too.
Wow!
So it's really kind of insane.
Yeah. So, I didn't know that. It's really cool. Yeah, it's neat that, you know, people, I'm just glad the game shows are still around. I mean, you think about how long, you know, since days of radio, right?
But Wheel of Fortune, not only on TV, but also the old 8-bit games as well, you know, the old Ataris and Nintendo. And
yeah, and it's, I guess they did. Yeah. Wow.
Have you played Wheel of Fortune on a video game? Ever?
No, I think I did. Very little, like it seemed like we did it on Wii. Remember the Wii
system
that everybody was doing for a while? I think we did a version of that, but not really much. No, but people bring them in sometimes. I've seen, you know, some of the fans will bring them to the show or whatever. We have board games out there and stuff, you know. So
that's great.
It's really cool.
And the fans really are, the fans are amazing. I mean, the loyalty there is, you know.
Yeah, it, you know, they feel like hometown folk. They really do when I meet them, and it's just so great. It's like it's like you're putting on a play at, I don't know, your church or whatever, your banquet hall for the whole community, and it's like you all kind of, you're all from the same town. You don't know each other, but you get together, and it's that kind of a feel to me. You know?
So I'm thinking, one day Vanna's gonna say, "Okay, I've had enough," and I think Brooke, you're the next the letter turner.
Right? I think so.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Wouldn't I have to dye my hair? Otherwise, people would complain. That would be just too much of a change from beautiful Vanna.
And I'm curious how Vanna started doing that. I mean, did she work in game shows before? Was she a prize girl, or how did she get that?
She was a model. She did modeling, and I don't know what she'd made appearances, and she'd she was on a. You can see this on YouTube. She was on The Price is Right as a contestant one time.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, like in 1980-ish, you know. So, yeah.
Jim,
pretty
this
cool.
has been a blast. It's been a great
time. It has
along.
Been.
And we've known
it's
you
like
for
old
a while
home week.
As well. Yeah, exactly. And Brooke as well. I mean, it's like, you know, up till yesterday, we hadn't talked for like 10 years. So it's a, sometimes it.
No.
Yes, at least. Sometimes it's
so
actually more than that, because I went off air about 2009. And by 2008, we stopped doing doing Shadow. We used our own traffic. But,
I guess so. Well, we talked online, though. We had
you were online. Yeah. She always calls me Hot Mike. That was...
Hot Mike. That's my nickname for him.
Hot Mike, It's a Hot
Brooke
Mike.
Was,
that's cool.
Been. So
that's great.
But it's been great. And often I would I'd be in the studio because we carried CNN at the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour as well for a minute. And you'd hear, occasionally you'd hear Brooke's voice on there. I was like, God, she just hates that. You know, I feel so bad for her, you know.
No, see, I loved it. It was so much fun.
How fun.
I would go in there in the middle of the night. Oh, my favorite, by the way, at CNN was to, they always had me doing the NORAD because I was the young one. You know, I had the young voice. I still have a young voice. And they thought it was really fun to give me like the kicker story. So they'd give me the NORAD Santa trackers because I always worked holidays. And I had such fun with it. I'd go in at 2 in the morning. I'd be like, Santa is on his way. And, you know, I mean, I think anybody's kids were actually up listening to this at 2 a.m.
They might have. Of course not. That's
neat.
But
they might have been, yes.
Yeah.
So it was great.
That's cool.
Hey,
it was a good time.
We are out of time. And again, Jim Thornton, I thank you so much. And you are on social media. They'll find you there as well. You're on
Facebook.
Facebook and tons of footage of you on YouTube as well, and you're on the air actually in about 45 minutes. So
I better get ready. That's right.
Exactly. And again, this is your
great.
Off week, so you can do that.
Yeah.
Jim, will you come back on again? Maybe co-host one time.
Absolutely, it'd be fun. Yeah.
Because you're set up, and I'm surprised you're not doing your own podcast. I mean, you know, everybody else is.
Yeah, I know. I've thought about it. I should get your agent. Right.
Yeah. Steve Edwards is podcasting. Now he's doing that.
Yeah.
And Fritz Coleman as well is doing podcasts as well.
Yeah.
Him.
Yeah.
And, actually, Fritz
good
is
people.
Doing a big comedy thing now, big comedy tour. And he was on KTLA.
He is
as
hilarious.
Well.
His brain. He's such a nice guy. Steve Edwards, too. I love Steve. Yeah. Yeah, just good people.
I
That's
used to see
nice.
Fritz every morning. We go over. I go over to either Patty's in.
Oh yeah, Lake, in Burbank.
Or Jinkies across from Radford.
Yeah.
And he'd be there, and just the nicest guy. And
he
even
is.
At Universal Studios, as I would leave during Christmas, he was also often there taping or doing live shots from the mm-hmm. Christmas tree on City Walk.
Yeah.
You know, for different charities and stuff. So it was again, it's a small world.
Yeah.
Everyone
really
knows
is.
Each other. Yeah, and you may be one place today and somewhere else tomorrow, but people still find you. It's good.
Yeah.
Jim Thornton.
And we all know each other.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Inside and out. Jim Thornton, iconic voiceover artist. Northern
blowing
California.
Kisses. No, both of you. You guys are the icons.
And, of course, the host of Wheel of Fortune. We thank you.
Thank
Don't
you,
Don't go
guys.
Away just yet. And, Brooke, I'm not done with you yet. Great having you on as well as a co-host. We got to find out about that book. So when that book comes out, let me know. We'll have you on. We'll talk about it. And we'll decide if it's good or not.
Okay.
You know,
but if it's bad, just tell me nicely.
I will. Yeah.
Thank you.
Where's my sound effects board? I don't have it. Anyway, but we'll do that. Hey, Brooke and Jim, I thank you.
Thank you.
Folks,
thank
that's
you.
A, that's
See you
a wrap, guys. Stay right there. Don't go away yet. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on X. Follow us on Instagram @ Conversations Radio. This is Conversations Radio. So long.